out there, everyone in podcast land and NPR land. Welcome back to the Front Row Podcast, the podcast for people who actually like movies. Here we are to bring you the next movie in our lineup of Oscar spotlights for 2020. We've been breaking down all of the movies nominated, and there are a ton in the Best Picture category this year. We'll also be breaking down the categories in the week leading up to the Oscars, airing Sunday, February 9th. So I am Erin McCabe, a regular contributor on the Front Row and a feeler of feelings, hosting tonight's episode of the Oscar Spotlight. And joining me tonight is Ryan Lutens, co-host of Flashbacks and our award season junkie. How's it going, Ryan?
It's going. This is my favorite time of year. This is going to be my third out of four spotlights. Did one for the past night. So yeah, bring on the Oscars. I'm ready.
Also joining us is Jason Hoffman, another Front Row regular and the gentleman leading the pack, I believe, in screen reviews. How's it going, Jay?
Good. It's going well. We just did Joker, so this will be a little more chill, I think.
Yeah, this movie was a little lighter than Joker, for sure. So tonight we're breaking down Ford versus Ferrari, a 2019 American drama directed by James Mangold and starring Matt Damon and Christian Bale with John Bernthal, Josh Lucas, and Ray McKinnon in supporting roles. This movie tells a story of contentions between the Ford and Ferrari car companies in the 1960s, as well as how Henry Ford II tasked automotive visionary Carroll Shelby and his British driver Ken Miles with creating a sports car that would finally put Ford in competition with the sports car magnate Ferrari in the 1966 24-hour Le Mans race in France. So this movie was released November 15th, and if I'm being quite honest, I knew nothing of it. I had not heard of it. I had not seen any trailers. Nothing. This has been a word of mouth film for me that I've heard about it through, and it's thus grossed about $216 million worldwide and has been nominated for several awards, including four Academy Awards, one of those being Best Picture. The other Academy Awards it's up for is Best Film Editing, Best Sound Editing, and Best Sound Mixing. So let's get right down to it. And what are your guys' initial thoughts on the film? Ryan.
You know, for me, when I first heard about Ford versus Ferrari, I was like, okay, Oscar bait. And then, you know, it doesn't get nominated for a crap ton of Oscars like The Joker. I mean, it's just kind of like nuts. I mean, here you have a biopic, but it's not really a biopic that's telling about a moment in history. And I think this movie does a really good job of just being straightforward. It's a great sports movie. And it doesn't really rely too much on drama. The drama's there because it's a sports movie, so you want them to win. But it's just very laid back in the way it tells its story and its relationships. And through the relationship, we get a lot of humor. So this movie is just a great blend of everything. And I don't necessarily want to say it's the feel-good movie of the year, but I definitely felt good watching. I really enjoyed it and how I felt after compared to other films that I watched. So those are my first thoughts.
What about you, Jay?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think the reason you didn't notice anything the movies because the trailers were hot garbage. I think this movie did not look good at all. I had zero interest in seeing this movie. And I couldn't help but notice at the beginning, you didn't name the one woman in the movie that had a line because this is the man movie.
I
don't mean that in a bad way.
No, right.
This is a very machismo movie, and you're right. Like what Ryan said, I think it's straightforward, but I think in a different time and era, this is a summer blockbuster movie to me. I mean, I found it that engaging and fun.
Now, it's interesting you say that as a woman. I mean, not saying that women can't be into cars, but I'm not a woman who's really into cars. And so I've heard this movie kind of be dubbed a motorsport bromance. And I think it's definitely deeper than that, but I was not really interested. And I'd almost say that for the first half of the movie, I wasn't terribly invested or engaged in the story because it was kind of dragging. And it was mostly like you just kind of watching the Ford company's ego machismo, like toxic masculinity ego just kind of ooze all over the place. And I was like, ugh, I am just not into this. And then there is a scene halfway through where once that scene happens, it's like a pivot takes place. And all of a sudden I was all in. I loved it. I thought it was fun. I understand why it's nominated for sound editing. The sound is incredible. It brings you into the experience. And I loved the relationship between Matt Damon's Carol Shelby and, Christian Bale's, Ken
Miles.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I blanked out his name there for a second. So yeah, all of a sudden, I mean, I agree with you. It was like, it was oozing masculinity in an unpleasant way in the beginning. But once they really started, once that pivot happened, it was like, I was so there for it. And I really enjoyed it. I loved it.
You know, and you have to think about, go ahead, Jay.
I was going to say, I think that's the like you said, the top brass, especially Henry Ford II is kind of that, he's the epitome of some of that toxic masculinity. I mean, that whole scene where he's just lecturing the folks in his factory and just like the most terrible owner of a company way, you know, just belittling
their
work and everything like that. And so there's that one scene we'll get to later on that's just so refreshing that it happens to him. And his masculinity sort of melts away in a big way.
Definitely.
I think a part of that plays into is, you know, look at the time frame. We're in 63, 64, 65. So this is when women are really starting to break out out of those traditional roles that they may have had in the 40s and 50s. You know, and it's not going to be until, dare I say it, Danica Patrick really comes into the racing scene, but I mean, they weren't really given the opportunity. I mean, this, in the idea, it was a man's world, you know, which it shouldn't be a man's world. Racing can be fun for anybody.
And I think you're right. And I think one of the pitfalls that people fall into is what I call time machining, like where they're mad about something that's happened in the past and how it was instead of real, like we don't have a time machine yet. We can't go back. And you're right. Just acknowledging and saying, this was how it was. These were how roles, like we ran into this on The Irishman. It was like, well, there weren't many females. It's like, well, in that period of time out there in the world, it really was a lot of men. So like, I wasn't offended that there weren't a lot of females. Like I'm not someone who, I don't feel like there needs to be female roles in every movie if the time period doesn't call for it. I mean, cause we're going to later in the week, we're going to get into 1917. There's not one woman in that film. Not one, you know, and that's just the time period. So I think, you know, we have to be careful what we get angsty about. And I would agree, but I would say that, I don't know if I'm saying her name correct, Katrina, or if it's even, I mean, there's a lot of vowels in there, but like Katrina Balfe, she was an amazing character as Ken Miles' wife and a beautiful pillar of strength for him. And they created a character, like you could tell he relied on her. You could tell that he confided in her, that he did rely on her as strength and comfort and confidence throughout this movie. So like, it was very evident that even though there wasn't a lot of females in this movie, that the ones who were in there were important.
Yeah. That lady that we're talking about who plays, it's Katerina Balfe. She's Irish, but she's mainly from the Outlander series, which my wife loves. So when I was watching it, my mind was like, I know her. And I go, well, really? She's the only female, so she better be good.
Oh, that's her. Yes, yep. Yes. Oh, and women love Outlander.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I like the scene where she's all mad at Ken, and she was driving the car down the road like a lunatic. And taking the madman and instilling an intense level of fear in the race car driver with how she was driving. I mean, just to get him to finally open up.
Right.
I thought that was a great scene.
Yeah, that Go on, Ryan. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I just want to, I guess we're going to dive into things that we liked. And you know, for me, this movie plays really well because it's a serious movie that has great comedy, and that comedy comes through all the chemistry of this entire cast. This casting is phenomenal. You know, later when we go down the road and we talk about Oscars, I'm going to talk about how Christian Bale was robbed. But before then, I mean, Tracy Letts, I mean, stage legend, Broadway legend, Tracy Letts as Henry Ford II was by far one of the best supporting casting decisions they've ever made. He killed it. Like, I felt like I was watching a business mogul, you know, run the show, and, you know, Matt Damon being sneaky and getting away with it. But, you know, you have Ray McKinnon from, you know, I remember him from Sons of Anarchy and Deadwood. He's a great character actor, and he was just great as, you know, Matt Damon's right-hand man. I mean, everything just kind of fell together cast-wise. And then when you have a great script, like Ford versus Ferrari, everything just kind of falls into place. Like, the, you have great actors who know how to deliver, and that comedy just kind of flows through their relationship. And for me, that's really what sold the movie as a good movie, because you have this dramatic theme, but you have these relationships that you would think that they'd been acting together for some time, because everything just kind of flowed together. One thing I can't think of is when we first meet Christian Bale and Matt Damon, and Christian Bale throws a wrench at Matt Damon. Miles throws the wrench at God, what's Damon's character?
Carol Shelby,
and Shelby treasures that. And to me, that just shows, I mean, just the progression of their relationship. And of course, the wrench plays a huge part, because I guess I'll be the spoiler. You know, Ken Miles dies. He goes on and tests another car. Like, he's crashed a million, but this one was the one. And it's like Ray McKinnon said, sometimes they don't get out of the car. And Matt Damon uses that wrench to kind of extend to Miles' son, you know, just keep doing you. And it's just such a beautiful moment. I just, the relationships, everything about this movie and the characters were awesome. So.
Yeah. I actually thought this was a nice bit of a change for Matt Damon. I think at first I didn't think it was, but as the movie went on, I thought this was a little different than a lot of the stuff he's ever done before. I kind of liked the, I don't know. I there was something about how he played it, where he's a guy in a leadership position, he's trying to take over, but he's also trying to play the politics, and he's the cowboy. And I don't know. It seemed a little more grown up than I think a lot of his other stuff. But,
yeah, he did such a great job of balancing exactly that, like being true to himself, but also right, like kind of rank and file while dealing with the Ford company. And then also obviously balancing himself and his integrity in his friendship that he developed. He clearly had I think that speaks to the respect that he had for Ken Miles when he hung that wrench up after he threw it at him. He saw his potential. He just knew he was a hothead. But I agree with you, Jay. You know, there's not really anything I've seen Matt Damon in that I don't like him in, but there was something about this role that just, I don't know if it was the chemistry between him and Bale, but there was something that was just like, I don't want to say soothing, but like, he was someone I would have wanted to work for.
Yeah.
He was someone I would have stood behind. And I think that feeling of comfort of like, that's somebody, that's a leader I'd get behind, is something I think that makes him like, it makes it palpable in this role.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Well,
I mean, it almost goes as far, you know, you can make the argument that he should have gotten supporting actor nod, because in this role, that's all he ever did for Christian Bale. He just stood up for him in such a way with such power and conviction. It just made him like the man's boss, you know, and you're just sitting there and you're like, I want to be there, like, you know, doing all the tricks that he did during the race. Like, those are just things that I think really attested to his character and his acting, because, you know, he really brought it home as the boss, but not really the boss, because he had people he had to answer to. But in that world, he was the boss.
And I think that you bring up an excellent point that just came to me now that I couldn't quite put my finger on before, but especially in the 1960s and that whole like machismo masculinity, it's like right? Henry Ford II and even Josh Lucas's character, they're like kind of coming down like hammers. It's like, I'm in charge. I make the decisions. And here you have Carroll Shelby, who is this visionary leader in automotive innovation. And he's the one in charge of this car. And so if you think about it, he could have really approached this as like, I'm in charge of you. I'm the leader of you. But he gave he gave so much authority and autonomy to his driver, so much trust. And so what I think he really showed is like leading from the back. You know, I think that there were a lot of men, it was like, everyone just got to lead from the front all the time. But exactly, like, he was almost, even though he was the leader and the ringleader, he was leading from the back and he was supporting Ken. He was supporting, like, he was doing all those little things under the scenes. Because his ego, as much as he was invested, his ego wasn't invested in it in that way.
He just wanted to win.
Well, yeah. I think he wanted Ken to win.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that goes with the whole wrench thing. I mean, he respected him enough that, you know, this was a guy who was racing. And, you know, Shelby, he had a heart condition, so he could no longer race. So it's almost like he saw a little bit of himself in Miles, and that he wanted to push Miles and back Miles because he saw a lot of him in Miles.
Yeah. So I would agree.
Yeah, and with the leadership thing, I was, you know, we're talking about this movie and it being up for Best Picture, I was trying to think, you know, what makes a movie, you know, a Best Picture. I mean, I think this is just a very well crafted movie, but maybe, you know, if you take a step back, I don't think I saw it up front just because this movie's so entertaining. Mm-hmm. But maybe there's some commentary there about leadership and toxic leadership and some of the stuff that's going on in the world right now, you know, maybe just a little bit, but, it's so entertaining. You know, you know, you don't hardly catch it till somebody brings it up.
Well, and I think you're right, Jay. And I think that, you know, one of the big pieces that maybe portrayed that was, I saw this, you know, I see this parallel in a different movie that's going to be discussed later in the week, but like, you know, the Ford execs are all in their ivory tower, right? Like, they come flying in their jet, see how things are going, while Shelby and Miles are on the racetrack every day. And with, I can't think of McKinnon's character's name. I'm blanking on it. But, you know, they're out there every day. They're out there with things exploding. They're out there when the car is crashing. He's out there testing it. And so, you know, it's so easy. And we see this, and I think we're starting to see it less in structural leadership. But like in big organizations, a lot of times what happens is you get this big disconnect from the execs and the CNOs and the CEOs and the COOs who are making all these high level decisions. And they're not understanding how it's affecting people down at the granular level. And so, you know, there's even less middlemen in the 60s as far as companies go and compared to how structures are today. And so you've got them flying in on their jets and being like, we don't like Ken. We don't think he's the right guy for the job. And you have Shelby going to bat for him and saying like, you're not out here with us every day. You're not seeing what we see. You're not experiencing this as we're experiencing, and therefore you're not trusting me as a leader. And so I do see, at least like, I'm a nurse, so I see this in the hospitals. Like, I see that not only that disconnect, but that attempt for executive leadership to try to bring it back down to like, you know, the granular level. But I think you're right that maybe that is why it got nominated. Like, I think there is definitely a message for this and how to go to bat for people, you know, are putting their blood, sweat, and tears into something because they're truly trying to strive for excellence instead of hustling for worthiness.
I agree. Yeah. 100%.
I see that a lot too. I do occupational safety. So I got a lot of businesses and I see exactly the same things that you're talking about. So I think that's a good point. Also, just real quick, Ray McKinnon's character's name's Phil Remington. How could we forget the name of that?
Phil.
Yes.
Phil Remington. It's a man name.
It is a man. There's a lot. Yes. Carroll Shelby. Remington. Yes. I mean, really, I loved their whole dynamic, their whole team. Like, someone asked me, you know, because this movie is obviously about Ford building the GT40, and I told somebody who is a car lover, I said, oh, you got to go see this movie. And he was like, wait, you saw it? I'm like, yes. He's like, okay, well, when you saw this movie, like, what would you pick? So a Ferrari or a Ford? And I'm like, well, after seeing this, I'd want a GT40 for sure.
You know, watching that
I mean, from the 60s effort, I don't know about now.
Yeah. that team effort that's so enjoyable to watch. I think that's one of those things in life that if you've never been on like a team, man, that's together, like the feeling of that, even just watching it, man, it puts that feeling, some warm feeling right in your belly, man. It just feels good watching people, you know, work together and overcome odds from their own kind of quote unquote team.
Definitely.
So I think you're right, man. That element was a pretty rad part of the movie.
Well, I think, I mean, just that's the, I mean, I almost want to say that's the overall theme. I mean, look at Bale's Ken Miles, because at the very end of the movie, he wanted to win it, and he was going to win it, and he wanted it, and he wanted it, and he was going to do it. He was breaking his own records, and Ford's like, no, we want the three Ford cars to go across the line at the same time. And Matt Damon is supporting his driver and saying, no, you take it. You earned it. You take it. And as he's driving, that moment when he's in the seat, it's just a powerful moment, because he realizes that he's a part of a team. And you can just see it on his face. There's no dialogue. It's just all Christian Bale's brilliant acting and how he expresses emotion with just his face. Mm-hmm. And he lets up off of the gas, and they cross the finish line at the same time. And yet, Christian Bale's Kenneth Miles does not win, because another Ford car came back from a further distance. So they had, you know, come up from a further to get the first place. So he was screwed, basically. But what I really love about that scene is that he looks up at the owner of Ferrari and he takes his hat to him. That, yes, to me, is worth a thousand. I think in that moment, Bale realizes, okay, he is a part of a team, and he did it with them.
Okay,
go on that, Fred.
I've got. We're here. We're on to the big yes. So in the end, exactly, in the 24-hour Le Mans race, which is literally 24 hours of racing, where it seems like they do almost like a relay. Like the driver goes on for a certain amount of hours, comes off, takes a rest while someone else is driving, and so exactly as Ryan described it, there is at the end, basically, Josh Lucas, who plays, I believe his name is Leo Beebe. He is just a slimy executive.
Dirtball.
Just the worst. The worst. I mean, and again, to talk about how amazing this acting is, I mean, I like Josh Lucas, the poor man's Matthew McConaughey. But he was just the worst in this movie. And so I felt like the last 35 minutes, I did not expect to be on the emotional roller coaster that I was on. From the minute Josh Lucas's character, Leo Beebe, says, you know what would be great? Let's have all three Fords cross the finish line at the same time for this great PR thing. And you just knew there was something behind it. So I was so excited when Shelby gave Kenneth Miles the okay to say, it's your car, you do what you want. And he was giving them the middle finger. He was beating his own record. He was doing all those things. And I was like, yes, like, good, stick it to them. Because while this 24-hour race had gone on, Henry Ford II left for about, what, 16 hours to go
in a helicopter.
Yeah, in a helicopter to go do other things. And I was like, what a joke. This, you know what, like, again, speaking to the whole, like, ivory tower of executive leadership, it's like, you're not even here. Enzo Ferrari stayed the entire time. Like, this is why that guy was the car champion. He was so invested in his own craft. And so I loved that he was doing that, that Kenneth Miles was really sticking it to them. And then exactly, he slows down and says so softly, come on, boys, like, for them all to catch up. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Like, now I went from being pissed to I was really excited and feeling vindicated. And then I started to feel like super excited. Like, look at this. This is amazing. They're all going to come in together. What a team player. And then he crosses the finish line. And again, speaking to Christian Bale's amazing acting, they bring the flowers and the trophy over to the other Ford racer. And Christian Bale's Kenneth Miles is like totally confused. And you can see his heartbreak right there. And I was like, I wrote it down in my notes. I'm like, I am rageful. I am rageful that this has happened. I cannot even believe it. I mean, I have not had my emotions turn on a dime like that in a movie in a very long time. But then that head nod to Miles, it was like, to him, that meant everything. That meant more, because he was also a man committed to his craft.
Yeah. You know what? What got me on that one was when, because I was like, I was with you, rageful. I love that word. I was also rageful. But then it flashes to his wife and she goes, he's doing it. And yeah. She was so proud and happy of him for finally like accepting that, you know, people do care about him. Not everybody's out to screw him over and they're, you know.
Yeah.
So I like what you said. The head nod was a good note for Ken Miles, but I think his wife saying that was a good cue for the audience.
Mm. Yeah, you're probably right. Oh, man. What other, you know, if we're going to get into the scenes, I'd love to talk about the scene that I felt like for me really pivoted the film, where I went from not feeling very connected to it to being like, I'm all in. And for me, that scene was the when the executives, including Henry Ford and Leo Beebe, fly in. And they're talking to Shelby again to try to take Ken Miles off of as the driver. And Shelby gets Henry Ford. He goes, come on, let's go for a spin. And he takes him out on the track. And it's just incredible. That scene is incredible. He's flying him around. I feel like that was when the sound really kicked in on this movie. That was when all of a sudden I felt immersed, like I was in the vehicle. I hadn't picked up on that before that, but then it was like the rest of the movie, I was just immersed with the sound of the race at all times, which I loved. But he takes him, he flies him around the track at, I don't remember how fast they're going, like 200 miles an hour, and they stop, and Henry Ford breaks down like a baby, bawling his eyes out. At first, I wasn't sure if he was laughing, bawling, and Shelby, he knew it was going to happen. He knew, and he just let him cry, asked him a few times if he was okay. But the best part of that was when, like, he's reduced to tears. He's reduced to just being a vulnerable little boy and saying, I had no idea. I had no idea.
Well, for me, it's also, he says no idea, but then he also says, he alludes to his father. He goes, yeah. I wish my father was here. And to me, that strikes home. Like Ford had no idea what he was doing. He didn't know what it meant to be behind the wheel of a car. He's all about building them. He's all about making money. But to branch off into this racing division and then actually feel the speed, it was a whole new ball game for him.
Yeah, that was he showed so many different things. Like you said, respect to his family's heritage and starting all that fear of not having any clue, the skill set that it takes to maneuver a piece of equipment like that, and just not being in control. He's in the passenger seat. That's the first time he's just has no control over anything.
Yeah.
It conveyed. That's the best scene in the movie.
Scene in
the movie. That thing was awesome. I was like, I was laughing. So I couldn't stop laughing when it was happening.
I was laughing so hard just because of one thing. So Josh Lucas's BB is talking to Matt Damon. And Matt Damon, he knows what he's going to say, but they don't want Miles in the driver's seat. So Miles is like, Matt Damon's like, excuse me. Shelby's like, I got to go do something real quick. He locks the door. And Lucas knows what he's going to do to go try to tell Ford, like, you have to be able to have an experienced driver in this car. And my favorite line is after Luke or BB gets out of the office, he's sitting there watching this happen, and Ray McKinnon just looks at him. It's the funniest line I think in the whole movie. He goes, he says it with a straight face. This is about time when the passenger usually soils themselves. It cuts back to Tracy Letts, and he's like, ah! My wife's like, you are laughing so hard right now.
Well, and right, like, so here you've got Ray McKinnon's character, Remington, like, even he's been in the, like, even he understands.
Yep.
So you've got all these guys working on these cars who have been drivers. None of them, you know, Josh Lucas's character never been in a car. The only one in that company that they at least portrayed that had respect for the vehicles seemed to be John Bernthal's Lee Iacocca.
Yep. Agreed.
He was the only like liaison, really truly, I felt like on the racer and the engineer side. And, you know, there's even that scene. So many scenes, especially now that you've brought it up, Jay, are really tying in. Like, there's that whole scene when they first discuss after they lose, a race, where Henry Ford is trying to throw his weight around and intimidate, you know, Shelby, being like, why should I hire you again? And why shouldn't I fire you? And he brings up, he's like, I've seen that red folder go through four people's hands before it got in here. That doesn't happen at Ferrari. Like, this happened, like, there are too many cooks in the kitchen to create the type of quality product you're looking to create. So you either get out of my way and you let me do what I'm meant to do and stop micromanaging me, or continue to have the same product and the same, you know, the same thing you've been keep putting out there. But again, like, you can't do something different doing things the same way.
I agree. I mean, it's that scene. I mean, it goes to show it's definitely like, again, we say he's taking that leadership role. He goes, these, you know, you sit here and you have so many channels that you have to go through. That's not how it goes at Ferrari. It's a decision and they go with it. So it really kind of opened it began to open Ford's eyes, not Josh Lucas, but it definitely opened Ford's eyes to that aspect. So, I that scene stuck out to me too.
Yeah, I think other scenes for me, it's just the racing and how they filmed it, and how it felt. I can't recall another racing movie that felt so. How visceral, you know, it just felt very real. Like you're very much in it and very intense. I mean, this movie would have been so awesome to see in IMAX with the sound blaring and the giant screen. If it weren't for those terrible trailers, maybe it would happen, man.
You know, Jay, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I guess we could dive right into the Oscars. Maybe. But that was exactly the reason why those got the three technicals that it did, editing, sound mixing. Every race scene felt like you were in a car. It was crazy good. And kudos, hats off to that technical team because they made you feel like you were on the speedway, on the track, not afraid to get hit. I mean, it was phenomenal.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
The cars were beautiful. The racetrack were beautiful. Like even the like panning shots and in the cinematography, like it just looked beautiful. It felt beautiful. You felt the power, of the machine. And even the way I think that tied into, there was such a respect for the power of the machinery that Shelby knew and understood and definitely Ken Miles. Cause he has that whole discussion with his son. Like you can't push a machine. You need to know when to let it go. You know, and everything. And I felt like the cinematography and the race scenes just they captured the beauty. So even though, you know, there weren't many women in this film, they referred to all the cars as female.
Yeah.
Like, they, you know.
Though there were technically a lot of women.
Yeah, exactly. But like, I mean, there was a respect for these vehicles. There was a respect for, and I think that was shown in the the cinematography, like for people, I mean, I'll tell everybody to see any of the movies that we're talking about, but definitely like this is such a fun film and it really just showcases the brilliance of a machine that can do something like this.
Yeah. I mean,
I think something interesting you said about how the pushing of the machine, you know, that kind of parallels with the pushing of the workers, you know, and respecting their autonomy. I didn't really put it together until you said it, you know, they kind of parallel each other in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to cut you off, Ryan.
No, I was just going to say the same thing. I mean, you said the cinematography, and there's one scene that really stands out to me in the cinematography. It's when Miles is driving at night during the Le Mans race, mm-hmm. and it's literally just his eyes and the shadow contrast.
Yes.
It was just a nice, I mean, his eyes, the focus was his eyes because he's driving. He's doing a task right now.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I mean, it just really conveyed his character and like this was what he was meant to do. You know, and it's funny because the BAFTAs, which are the, you know, British equivalent of the Oscars, they nominated this movie for cinematography. You know, the Oscars did not, but BAFTA certainly got it because there were some great scenes that we got some excellent cinematography from this movie. And that's just one really big scene that pops out in my eyes when he's driving the Le Mans at night and it's just his eyes. Really powerful.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, this movie just overall impressed me. I was kind of the same. Like, I just was like, I'll watch it. And then I watched it and I was like, oh my gosh, telling my husband, like, you need to see this movie. This is really good. What other, any other performances that stuck out for you guys?
Cars, I mean, performed pretty well.
Right?
The cars. I'll get into two things. First off, the little boy who played the son. This was a strong year for child actors. And this kid really shone. He wasn't annoying. Like, he just was very in awe of his father. And he wanted to know and learn the craft from his father. It was really some amazing chemistry between Christian Bale. And I want to make sure I have this kid's name right. Christian Bale and his name is Noah Jupe. He was the kid in A Quiet Place. But yeah, I mean, that in and of itself, but when the other performance I want to talk about, let's just get down to it. Christian Bale, his performance, and we've talked about Matt Damon, but Christian Bale, he is probably one of the greatest character actors we're going to have in this, you know, generation. I think he's going to be the next Daniel Day-Lewis, because Daniel Day-Lewis retired.
I felt the exact same thing after this movie.
This guy can transform into any role and he's unrecognizable. Yeah, it's Christian Bale, but he is unrecognizable what he does with his body, you know, whether getting fat or getting thin or getting right in between, voice inflections. This guy was so believable. And, you know, I read a trivia thing where he actually learned how to drive and you saw it in his eyes, like he's done it. And so it's just amazing to see him do what he needs to do in order to bring this character to life. Mm-hmm. You know, this was a character who lived life on the edge and that's what he did. You know, in the scene, he crashes two times. The third time is a fatal time, but the first time is like, he's on fire and he goes, what's wrong? You know, it's just, it's, and you believe him, you know, and it's just so awesome to watch. And what really upsets me is that, for the Golden Globes, this movie was not nominated for a single thing except for Best Actor in a Leading Role. That was Christian Bale. It was nominated for a SAG Award, Best Actor in a Leading Role. And I think Joaquin Phoenix said it best when Joaquin wanted the SAG. Christian Bale, just suck one time because this guy will take any role and he will kill it.
Yeah, he was there was a point in time, and I didn't get sucked out of it, right? Because you fully believe he's Ken Miles, but he's like kind of got this weird back hunch with how he walks. And I was like, that dude was Batman not that long ago. How is he this guy right now? I can't even understand what you have to do to get yourself there physically. Like,
well, he just seemed, yeah. That, thank you for bringing that up, because I felt the same way. Like, in the sense that I was like, is this Batman and Patrick Bateman? Like, yeah, he was just kind of like almost like making himself smaller, because I don't know his size in real life. And also, thank you for bringing this to like to light for me, because I think in watching him, like when he's talking crap to the drivers in the car, like while he's driving, I thought that was like just how he acts in real life. So I was like, well, is he really acting, or is he just kind of like, it's just like a Tuesday for him. And this is like, just, he's really in his element, you know? So thank you for opening my eyes to that. But oh, the kid was so good.
I
mean, he had heavy lifting to do with being like, minimal okay, dialogue. We're going to have you watch your father. You're going to think your father died. So, you know, let that play out. And when that first scene, when he was in the crash and the kids saw and they were all running, like my heart was breaking, because I had like a visceral reaction, because the look on his face of how he played it, of watching a child go through the trauma of thinking their parent just blew up in front of them. And then it doesn't happen just once. It happens twice.
Yeah. And what's heartbreaking. What's heartbreaking. I looked it up, you know, what's real, what's not. You never know in the biopics, you know, you got to tweak some things to the dramatic effect. And most of this stuff was minor, fairly insignificant, you know. Mm-hmm. That's not one of them. That's a real thing. That happened. That dude really watched his dad die in a car wreck like that. So that was not one of them that they changed for dramatic effect. That actually happened. So, makes it even heavier.
Yeah.
And he said, Ken Miles, I believe, is quoted as saying, I'd rather die in a racing car than get eaten by cancer.
Yeah.
And so he did die doing what he loved. No, but I think he just said, like, if people were like, isn't this dangerous? Like, why would you want to do this? And he's like,
he was more scared. He was scared of the outside world. He felt more at home inside of a car.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, tracking now. Gotcha. Sorry. It's late for us.
That's true. Kids. Yes. Well, as far as the awards discussion goes, Ryan, do you think this one's going to take anything home compared with the other contenders?
I don't, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. This year, we were blessed to have stacked categories. Mm-hmm. Everything is stacked. You know, we might rank them the way we think, but I think the sound is going to be hard, especially with 1917, film editing with 1917 and that incredible one shot take. You know, we as the front row, we're going to put our picks in, and I'm going to sit here and scratch my head until Sunday when it absolutely positively has to be turned in. It's nuts. I think that it's best chance of getting anything would probably be those sound awards, at least one. You know, hopefully they break it up, you know, one to 1917 and one to Ford versus Ferrari. But best picture, I think, unfortunately, it with how early it was released or right around when everything else is coming out, I don't know if it's going to take home best picture. But yeah, I hope it takes home something, because it does deserve it.
Jay, what about you?
And I'm not as knowledgeable on some of those technical awards and what they're looking for. But all I know is compared to most of the, you keep saying 1917, that's to me with that, the way that was edited, was also very visceral and puts you in there. So I could see those two battling it out, but, so far, some of the others I've seen, I don't see them as in the mix on those technical awards. As far as Best Picture goes, I think it's a great movie. I think it's entertaining. I think it hits. It's just a solid movie. Mm-hmm. But I think, just like you said, with the great year we've had with film, and some of the other Oscar Best Picture nominees. Just have, I think, a little bit more to say on a bigger scale. So not only are they just as solidly filmed, but I think they've got a message that's just a little bigger and a little more important than this movie does.
Mm-hmm.
So I put it, for me, it so far has been the most fun I've had by far.
Yeah, there's some real downers in there. In the best picture category this year.
Go listen to the Joker review.
Oh my God, yes. Although again, right? Like I was like, oh, at the end of this movie, I was like, okay, I feel better because Ken feels better about not winning. And then it was like Andy dies. And I was like, oh, why? Why did you do this to me?
Couldn't it have just been?
Yeah, exactly.
But maybe it's that he accomplished, you know, something great before he died. Maybe look at it.
He did. No, it was. It was a more feel-good movie. I agree with you, gentlemen. This to me doesn't seem like it's going. It doesn't seem like it's going to be the one that's going to take home Best Picture. Nor for me does it. Do I think it probably deserves Best Picture? I think it's got a great message, like how we've talked about it and kind of started dissecting it. It's an important and a compelling message. You know, in the allegory of race car driving. But as far as sound mixing and sound editing, I really agree with you, Ryan. I hope it takes home something. I just watched 1917 today and it was amazing. But I, at this current point, and I didn't get to see either of these movies at the theater, but at this current moment, I'm feeling like it was the sound on it. It was the sound for Ford versus Ferrari that really immersed me in the experience, because I think there were a lot of other things in 1917 that immersed me in that experience. So I'm rooting for this one to bring home something for sound.
Yeah, I think that's going to be its best chances. But, you know, I was just looking to see what the contenders are. 1917 is both mixing and editing. Ford Ferrari, Joker, mixing and editing, Once Upon a Time, mixing and editing, and then you've got Rise of Skywalker for editing, and Ad Astaire for mix. So those are the five and how they're interspersed. So it's going to be, the Academy has split it before. You would think that two sound awards, they'd get a bowl. They have split it. So I'm just hoping that it splits, because like you said, that immersion that you feel, you know, the revving of the engines, when the brakes squeal, because there's a lot of problems with brakes. I mean, it's, you feel it, you hear it. So
yeah,
hopefully it splits.
And you listeners are all going to get to hear about all of the categories breakdown, because our insane editor in chief, Jeremy, has decided that not only are we going to spotlight all of the Best Picture nominees, we're going to talk about all of the Oscar categories as well. So you can get your category fix in the week leading up to the Oscars.
It'll be fun. We're crazy.
We are nuts. You know, certain people have busy, like the accountants have tax season, the hospital has flu season, the Front Row Network has award season.
It's nuts.
So any final thoughts on this before we wrap it up?
You know, for me, this was definitely the feel-good movie of the year. It's definitely one that I was not expecting to be that way. One of my favorite scenes in this movie, and I'm glad I'm saving this towards the end, is when Shelby and Miles fight. They just get into a fight. It's right before Daytona.
Yeah.
And Shelby is just sitting there lecturing the hell out of them. And Bale just cold cocks him. Just right in the nose. And then Damon gets up and he goes, you know what? And he just tackles him. And it just felt fun. It felt real. And then at the end, you know, they're just sitting there laughing. He's like, you broke my pinky. He goes, oh, is that the thing that was jabbing me in the rib? I mean, it was just, it was fun. It was playful. And that's what this movie meant to be. It's telling you a serious story, but it's also telling you the relationship that made this happen. And that's what the movie's about. That teamwork, that leadership, you know, all the things that we discussed. So that's my final thought.
Jay, what about you?
Yeah. Like I said, I wish they just hadn't advertised this movie to me. The advertising was, it would only appeal to car lovers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a car guy or anything like that, man. And it was just so much better than that. And I like what you said, man. It's able to take that seriousness and bring some levity to it. And that's what I think is missing a lot in the world, is some, you know, some levity, happy outlooks, even in the roughest of times. And I think it does a really good job of that. And just like you said, it's a, it, this is an immersive movie. At least when they get the race cars going, man, you are in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, my quick little quip on just overall, I think a big message of this movie that is so important, is that a lot of times, I think even now, it's like when you think that your boss or the higher ups or whoever's at the top of that pyramid, when you're like, they don't care and they don't know what I'm doing or how I'm doing it. There is still an opportunity for you to care deeply about how you yourself show up in the world, about how you show up in your craft, and about how you show up in your relationships. And so even though, this movie, in my opinion, does not shine a positive light on Ford. It really makes them look like a bunch of pompous jerks. And to the point where I was feeling like bad for Enzo Ferrari, because you could tell he cared so much about the craft and the beauty of it. But so I loved this contrast to just basically show like the relationships at the end of the day are more important. How you carry yourself at the end of the day is more important than the way that the people you work for carry themselves. And so I agree with you too, Jason, that I started this movie off with a note, I know nothing about cars. And the end of the movie, my note was, I can't believe how riveted I was by this movie, and everyone should see it.
It's the Rudy of car movies.
It is the Rudy of car movies.
You know what? One thing I didn't say about it, I felt like this was a very very patriotic movie, man. It's about American ingenuity, not like that plastic patriotism, yeah. Like American ingenuity, man. If we just hit the grindstone, we can. So I meant to comment on that earlier, but I like that element too.
Yeah. They were men who were committed to excellence at their craft and pride in their job, not you know, relying on their ego. They were not relying on their ego. It was awesome. So if we're going to wrap this up, just before we go, we want to extend the invitation to any of the listeners or anyone out there who is in and around the Springfield area on Oscar night, Sunday, February 9th, to join members of the Front Row Network for a live Oscar party taking place at the Hoagland Center of the Arts. Come on out, get a ticket, bring your friends, bring your family, bring your love and knowledge of the movies. There's going to be, my understanding is, lightning round trivia in between commercial breaks and a whole bunch of other stuff. BYOB, bring your own food, bring your own fun, join the Front Row Network. And if you can't be there live, catch it on Facebook Live at the Front Row Network's Facebook page. So as always, thank you guys for listening to our episode. We hope you enjoyed it and the rest of the lineup we have for you during Oscar season. I'm Aaron McCabe.
I'm Ryan Lutens.
I'm Jay Hoffman.
And we'll see you in the front row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org.